Hi there, House Culture listener. If you enjoy this episode or have enjoyed listening to other episodes in our series, please support and donate to us through the Acast supporter feature. All donations will help us create the content that you love listening to. You can decide how much you give and there's no regular commitment. So it could be a one-off and every now and then or once every time you listen. It's up to you. Click on the supporter link that you can find in the episode or show description, and with Google or Apple Pay, it will take you less than 30 seconds to make your payment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey guys, this is Luke Van Dyke, and you're listening to the House Culture Podcast.
House Culture.
Hi everybody, you're listening to the House Culture Podcast with me, your host, the managing editor at House Culture, Matt Rouse. I hope you're all well and are looking forward to what I'm sure will be a scorching summer season of shindigs in the sunshine. Get those tickets bought and those bags packed, party people. I'd also like to thank you for tuning into this podcast and giving us your full attention over the next hour. It's you, dear listener, who helps keep this show going. So don't be afraid to tell your friends and invite them into our club culture community. And if it's your first time here, I'd like to warmly welcome you to House Culture. We are a collective of house music fans who have come together through their mutual love of the beat to celebrate the spirit of house music. The main room is over on Instagram at houseculturenet, so if you don't follow us there already, make sure you grab your spot on that virtual dance floor of over 100,000 other revelers to receive your daily dose of dance music. And if you want to become a true connoisseur of club culture, you can do so by browsing our back catalogue of podcast episodes featuring legends from our community. I'm talking about interviews with such luminaries as Paul Oakenfold, Roger Sanchez, David Morales and Purple Disco Machine. And if the new school of talent is your thing, you can also hear us chat to the likes of Josh Butler, Alan Fitzpatrick, Sidney Charles and Andrea Oliva. Whatever era you're into, we have got you covered. In this episode, we sit down with an Amsterdam-based DJ and producer who's been creating sick beats since his school days. His name is Luke Van Dyke, and in our chat, you'll hear our competition set him on his way in terms of success.
I also did this DJ contest, and I won that. I was super ready. Like, I've spent like thousands of hours in my studio at home or on my DJ set, and that's why the DJ contest was perfect, because I could just show that I'm a good DJ and actually get something of it.
How a certain Jamie Jones helped promote his music.
I basically made everything that I thought Jamie would like, Jamie Jones. So I sent him my music. He was like, oh, okay. I got a video tour manager that Jamie was playing my tune at Elro. And I was like, it's happening.
The creative process behind his hit album, First Contact.
That's also one of the reasons that at some point I wanted to do an album. I really wanted to show my world my more artist side, that I'm not just a tech house DJ.
And why the club culture community is such a special one.
If you are on the right dance floor, the right music, the crowd and the club just emerges into this big group of friends.
So, here he is. This is Luke Van Dyke.
House Culture.
Hi, Luke. Thanks so much for taking the time out of your busy schedule to sit down with us on the House Culture podcast today. You're a talent that has been producing since the age of 15, and you've released tracks on iconic labels such as Hot Creations and Solid Grooves. You also run your own label and have recently released your debut album. We want to get into all of that. However, we always start at the beginning on the House Culture podcast and ask if you can tell us whereabouts you grew up, what kind of household it was, and how you first discovered music there.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me, first of all.
You're welcome.
Yeah, I grew up in a little town in Holland called Hilversum, which is near Amsterdam. And both of my parents were like in music. My dad recently retired from, which has been a 35-year career of teaching music on high school. And my mom has been an opera singer for, I think, 35 years as well.
Wow.
So, yeah, music was always, always around at home. That was quite nice, actually, because I was just at home and, like, my dad, we had this big sound system in the living room. And mm-hmm. and it was, let me draw the scene there for you. Like, we had this swing in the middle of the room,
right.
Which that was my thing. Like, mm-hmm. I was always on the swing, just swinging and listening to music, listening to, like, CDs and records for my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom was more into classical and musical music, and my dad was more of jazz. Mm-hmm. And basically, like, everything was we had at home, so I was just listening to every type of music, and I just liked it all. And it started, like, at some point I was growing up a little more. I was, I think, like 7 or 8, and I had to play the piano. Mm-hmm. Always, that was one thing necessary in the house. You had to play an instrument,
right?
My brother played the piano as well and could play a little bit of guitar.
Uh-huh.
I tried the guitar, but it's just not for me. So I always played the piano for like 6 years, and basically whenever I did something bad, I got punished and I had to play the piano. They were like, okay, that's not good of you, you go play the piano for 1 hour. And I was like, nah. But eventually, like, I'm very happy that they pushed me into it. And I was about 12 and always still listening to music, to radio, always to radio and on the swing. And I got this new piano teacher who taught jazz.
Mm.
And the cool thing about jazz is that improvisation is a big part of playing jazz. And that's what started to get fun for me, because I could just, like, play the basses and then try whatever I wanted to try and just have fun on the piano. And at some point I started to compose. Mm-hmm. Like music, because then you improvise, you make this little melody, and you're like, oh, that's actually pretty catchy. And then you do more with that. And this one day my dad came home from school with this DAW, DAW, Cubase.
Mm-hmm.
With it's a musical program. Mm-hmm. To make music. And he had this old synthesizer from back in the day, and I started just to have fun and getting those ideas that I made on the piano into the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And I was about 12 then. That was kind of the start for me that I really started to, like, make music.
Yeah.
Not with any idea, not just the typical style of music, but just, songs.
Yeah.
And during that period, I was still listening to the radio, and I bumped across this radio program called Dance Department.
Mm-hmm.
And you had clubbing, and both those radio programs had guest DJs every weekend.
Yeah.
I was just listening, and I was like, whoa. And I heard all these tracks that I never heard before.
Mm.
And I was like, holy shit, okay. And then you had this, you had the free rock shop.
Mm-hmm.
in Holland. It was a musical chain where you could buy music.
Mm-hmm.
That was just, I went there with some money, and I saw the CDs of the same program that I heard on the radio, and there's just mix CDs.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, what? And okay, so I bought every month I bought a new CD, and I was on the swing and listening to the CDs. Because I wanted to hear those records again that I heard on the radio. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that, for me, that was a big, big step. And I was just, like, listening to music. And at some point, of course, DJing was very normal in that scene. And
yeah.
I was like, I'm making music now. I'm trying to make dance music now. So yeah, I think I also want to be a DJ as well.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was always showing my friends music and always busy with music, listening to music. And when I turned, I think, 12 or 13, I got this little Behringer DJ controller for my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was like, okay, yeah, this is cool. This is what I want. And
mm-hmm.
whenever there was somebody's B-day or my B-day or a school dance, whatever, I was just, okay, I'm DJing. I'm bringing my DJ controller.
Yeah.
And that's a really, like, a young guy just messing around, having fun, and also getting the support from your parents, because they were like, yeah, it's music, do whatever you want. That's super nice to have that.
Yeah. I mean, I was going to ask, like, what were your parents' impressions? Obviously, you know, you mentioned your dad was kind of from the jazz camp. Your mother was an opera singer. They were just happy that you were interested in music, or was there any kind of it's electronic dance music. Was there any kind of looking down on it in any way?
Yeah. To think about it, I never felt that they were always kind of open-minded about music. Mm-hmm. They didn't care what it was. I remember that my brother always listened to hip-hop, so I was listening to every kind of music, and my parents were also very down. I remember into The Offspring, this mm-hmm. old school rock band,
yeah.
And we are in the car, we just jammed that little tape all day long. It was so good. So no, they were just into everything, and in my home as well. So that's why we'll get into that later, of course. Mm. But I think that also is one of the reasons that for now, what I'm doing now is also, so in my point of view, kind of diverse, because I just like every type of music.
Yeah.
But anyways, it was super nice to get the support from my parents. My brother was always like, yeah, you need to, he never did anything with music. He works at the bank now. So he was always like, hey, you gotta go into school, and you have to have a plan B and everything. And my parents were always like, okay, you know what, just do what you want, because like after all, we managed to do it.
Yeah.
And it's all good. And I was in high school. I was about 14 or 15, and I was on this, I don't know how education is in the UK, but I was on this level where what I was doing was a little bit too much for me. So I dropped down a level. And while I was doing that, I was like, hey, this is fine, because now I can just also make music and spend time to work and to buy a nice DJ set.
Mm-hmm.
And that was nice, because I just did school, everything went well, and on the other end, I could just, when I came home, I could just make music and DJ, and that's what I liked. And after school, I went to the Herman Brood Academy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's basically a university for artists. Mm-hmm. And you had this I basically was studying dance producer. That was how they call it.
Mm-hmm.
And they told me everything there about being a DJ, being an artist, labels, everything, what it needed, social media, career, everything. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to be in that school. So I just, I'm very glad that, I got into that, because they, every year, like 300 students apply and only 30 get in.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. And going to that school, while still DJing, and I was DJing slightly more, like not only birthdays but now also real clubs, everything was just like, everything went kind of organic, which was very nice, because I was still living with my parents at the age of like 17, and I went to the school, and I got more gigs, and that was very nice. And the thing about being in a class with 30 other students that want the same thing is so unique and nice, because I think most of the things I've learned on that school was just from my classmates, because you go into the studio with other people and you just learn from each other and see what each other person is doing, because of course, like, a teacher has their own opinion, so they say that's not right, do that, you know. But that's the nice thing about music, is that it's kind of, there's no right or wrong. And going to the studio with your classmates and then just checking what they're doing and seeing if there's something in there what you can apply to your workflow. That has been game changing for me.
Yeah. And was it a collaborative spirit in there, or was there like an underlying element of competition between everyone, do you think?
No, not really, because everyone had their own like skill and interests. Mm-hmm. That's what they did quite okay on that school, is just checking out what a student has to offer. I remember that when I got in, I was fairly okay at DJing, fairly okay at producing. And I started back in the day, I started with like making commercial music. Mm-hmm. And at some point I started to listen to tech house and techno. We'll get into that later as well. And then when I signed up, I sent two tracks from what I like tech house, and one like commercial song. So I also show them that I got more to offer than just what I am. So that was kind of my package. And I had a friend of mine in the class, and he was only a super good DJ, but he couldn't produce at all. So they were like, okay, you know, they just look at what you have to offer and what you have to learn still. And it was a lot of house music, and mostly most students did like EDM commercial music, and also like trap, dubstep and everything. So it wasn't quite competitive, because it was all very like, it was very mixed. That was nice. And I don't know if it's still on that school, but our class, we really helped each other. And I got my best friends in that class, and we helped each other, and we got each other gigs, because everyone was from all over Holland. So basically, I was from Hilversum, and a friend of mine was from Amsterdam. So I said, okay, what if I get you a gig in Hilversum, you give me a gig in Amsterdam? And that's kind of how it went. And that was so cool to be on that. It's cool.
You know, that's amazing. You've had that kind of grounding. You know, you've come from it from a place of love anyway. You've enjoyed doing it. You've got this amazing educational grounding there. I mean, what lessons from that era at that academy still kind of resonate with you today that you still hold dear to you when you're producing material?
Well, that's the thing about what I just said earlier, that there is no right or wrong. And that's so nice. And just figuring out what you think is important in your sound, because they said like you had to make music in Logic Pro, and some people were just better in Ableton. And you can be a teacher and say like, but Logic is better. No, technology changes, and it's all about what you think is important. I've learned everything about mixing and EQing in producing, but now I'm totally not doing everything that I learned there, because sometimes you want to have an old school raw, like nasty kind of sound, and then it isn't important to have a clean kick or whatever, you know. So it's all about just listening and understanding it, but also just because it's music, do what you think is best. And that's always lesson number one. And it's of course it sounds easy, but it's something you learn along the way, and it just happens. But the other thing that was nice, that I'm not that good with collaborating and making music with other people, because it's kind of a personal thing. And it's, I don't know. It's just some people are good in it, some people are bad. I'm one of the bad people. but they forced you just to make music with also singers. And they, because that school was bands, hip hop, singers, songwriters, dance producers. So they kind of said like, okay, you need to make a track with a singer and a guitar player, and you're like, I don't want to. You have to. This is cool. I've learned a lot there, because sometimes it's good to just, even though you think it's not my thing, just do it. And you got forced to do it, so that was kind of nice to just also learn to collaborate with other people, because that's the best thing about, like, if you see what other people think about music and how they're doing it, it's super easy to learn your way, and like getting bits of other people's magic into your workflow and your work. So it's kind of interesting how that how music works, and especially when you're still learning, because that's I went to school, which was super nice. I was busy with 24/7 with music. I went to school. When I come back, I just also make music, DJ, whatever. And now what's so cool about, especially when I noticed in the COVID time, that now with internet, you can learn everything. And I also had internet when I was making music back in the days. But now it's just so like, you have so many tools, and it's so more specific as well. Like when I started making music, it was like 10 years ago. You had YouTube, and you're just like, okay, how does this program work? But now you don't only have how does Ableton work, you can actually, and its effects, Google how to make tech house like Luke Van Dyke. Like, and somebody made a video how I would make music. It was funny. I was watching and I was like, yeah, this is not how I make. But it just sounds like a song I made. But it's cool. But it's I've seen so many up and coming DJs and producers from 2 years ago that just like dived into it on YouTube and made like really good tracks like 4 months later. Mm. Like when I started making music, I was at least like 5 years in. Well, when I had a track, I was like, okay, this is okay, you know, I can show this to people.
Now,
things go really fast as well. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, you know, it's an incredible resource as well, isn't it, for people to learn and things like that and grow. I mean, when you were first producing tracks, or you built a big following on SoundCloud, and you're releasing a lot of your material through that. Just take us through
that. That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's been a game changer for my career, I think, because when I just discovered like really like making music and DJing, at the time when I was in school, and they kind of said to you like, okay, either you have like three ways how you're gonna make it into the scene. Like, one, you make a hit. Two, you invest a lot of money. Three, you can also, nowadays, you can go viral. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the same thing as a hit, but it isn't like, it can also be like social media. It's not only about like making a hit record. And I was really intrigued by that, because I was always like very like, okay, what can I do? I was always searching for opportunities. And when SoundCloud was fairly new, I was like, whoa, okay, but now you don't need a label anymore. You can just put out songs and people will hear them. And to me, it was not about like having millions of streams. I was more like, okay, I'll just put on this song that I just made because I think it's cool. Maybe someone else thinks it's cool. And I really remember, if I think about it now, that you put on a track on there and you said like you had 100 players, and you were like, oh, whoa, 100 people listen to that track. And then you started checking out, and you see the countries, the way it was, where it was listened, and that like that enthusiasm that it gave, like that's crazy. And then you get like weird like emails from fishy like labels from America, you know, like, you know what?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna make it, you know. and of course, no, that's not the case. But SoundCloud was my thing, because I was very into that. Okay, into that energy and that like, okay, you could just put something out and then get messages about it. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'm not gonna look for new labels because they don't want my music. And thinking back, I kind of agree, because like my first real releases, if I listen to them back, I'm like, okay, the ideas are very good, but still the mixing and everything, it's not that good. It's not that I'm still very proud of them. But I get why labels don't sign the tracks that I made. So anyways, I thought, okay, I'm just gonna put them on SoundCloud. It's a free download, because then just people just download your music, support them, play them, and that's it, you know. And it never was about making money, and I was still living with my parents, so I didn't have the urge to really make money, you know. So and at some point, the hype edit shit and the repost to download, you know, that was like, wow, okay, so now you can like make people go to a link to download your tracks. And that's why I started like releasing music, and you had to like my Facebook page. That was the thing. And that's also worth money, you know? So that was nice. I was just like releasing music, getting likes, because that was the most important thing for me then, back then. Like, okay, I need more Facebook likes, but that's going to give me gigs, you know? not fairly true, but at some point it was. I was just making music and releasing a little bit. I got more, at some point I had like a couple of thousand plays. I was super happy. And then I was like, okay, I was in this like second year of the academic. And I was like, okay, I need to, okay, how do I get more likes? I really need to grow, you know? And I thought, okay, the viral thing, is that something that's still approachable? And I was like, okay, yeah, let's try that. And I was just trying to be funny on social media, just being myself more as well, instead of all the cool DJs sharing photos of their jets, which I, of course, still don't have. But but I was like, okay, I'm going to show different content, because it's not always, why does music have to be so serious? And at some point, I was just like making funny shit and also showing my music. And I was at school, and there was this viral video going around of guys saying, like, in very bad grammar, like, I fuck the moms all or something. Like, and that was very funny. And everybody liked that. And I was like, okay, what if I do that in a track of mine and video that I'm making a track of that, like, that funny video? And that went viral. And it got like thousands of likes, and people were asking, like, okay, what is the track? Come on, send the track. And it was crazy. I got like radio DJs sending me stuff. Like, and like, I remember that Oliver Heldens, who was just before or just blew up, sent me like, hey, I need that track. And I was like, but there is nothing. This is it. This is like, this is what I have in a video. It's,
yeah.
I remember it's 14 seconds, which was Instagram story. No, they hadn't had stories. And 14 seconds, and that was it. And I was like, okay, I need to finish it right away. And I just finished it in one day. And I put it on SoundCloud, free download, like to download, whatever. And I had 10,000 plays in one night, which was for me like, oh, like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I still haven't got that in years, 10,000 plays in one night. So anyways, it was crazy. And that kind of blew up, and that gave me a lot of gigs and a good like starting level, because I was just playing three or four times a month. But now I really got like the fees got to like, I think, 400 or 500 euros, and no, I think a little bit less. But anyways, it was more like there was a it pushed me to like the other people see me as well, and that was super nice.
Yeah.
And to finally have a little sprint to be a bigger DJ.
Yeah. And I mean, so those gigs that you were getting from that moment, I mean, would you look back on that and think that was potentially like a big break, and the gigs that it was getting you, were they just limited at that point to Holland?
Yeah, definitely. Especially because the song was Dutch as well. So basically, I was 18, I think, then. And around that same time, I also did this DJ contest, which was called Kunstbender. It was really big contest of culture, like poetry, like art, like rapping, DJing. And I did that contest a couple of years. But it was the first year that I made it through the first round. And you had like six or seven rounds. So like two rounds, and then you had the quarterfinals in Holland. And then you started like competing with other cities. And then eventually you had the big finale in Amsterdam. And I won that. And that was crazy. That time, like winning a DJ contest, because I knew I was super ready. Like I've spent like thousands of hours in my studio at home or on my DJ set playing music. I was like, okay, I can do this. I just need the right resources to show people that I can do this. And that's why the DJ contest was perfect, because I could just show that I'm a good DJ and actually get something of it. Because the nice thing was, if you won Kunstbender, you got to play the Mysteryland Festival, which was biggest festival we had in Holland of dance music. And I won that. I got to play Mysteryland, and they even put me on the main stage, which was like, that was wow.
How was that? I mean, was that nerve-wracking?
Yeah, of course it was nerve-wracking, but on the other hand, I was like, I can do this.
Yeah.
You know? So it was it was good. But that was at that same period, I released that funny viral track.
Yeah.
So I was like, I felt like things were like really like popping off, and I did the gig. I'd done well, and then just gigs started going. I got my first booking agency, And I just got gigs more and more. And one of my classmates introduced me to a friend of his who organized deep house and tech house parties. And he was playing commercial music. So he was like, yeah, I can't do everything. I can't do anything with him. So maybe you can. And I started playing his parties, and his parties started to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I was his resident. So I was, that was my first residency. And I just started to really like play big cities in Holland and learning how that works as well. Mm-hmm. So there were this like, so I had the residency, I had the Mysteryland festival, I had the firewall track. Everything was going so well. Yeah. Like
all at the same time as well. Like
all at the same time. That, that was, I think timing as well. And you can time stuff, but timing can do a lot, you know, like how many tracks went, got a big hit because it was just the good timing, you know, like, so yeah, I started to get more gigs, not outside of Holland, but just in Holland. And that was the point for me to also send tracks to other labels, because I was kind of ready and it sounded good. And I was kind of done with the free downloads. And then I sent my music to Hector Couto. He was a fairly big DJ in Spain, still is. And yeah, he basically like, he gave me a platform for me to release my music. Yeah. And yeah, it was a label from Spain. So yeah, a lot of people saw that as well. And also a lot of UK DJs were releasing on the label as well. So yeah, that was kind of the starting point of also getting, just sending music to bigger labels, and achieving more, like bigger parties, better slots, and then play Belgium. And then, yeah, that it kind of, from that point, I think it's like 7 years ago, it just went very organic and just, it's a little bit more up and up and up. And when that happened, I was like, okay, I need to release my music on big labels because, I've done the label rounds, and I was like, okay, I need a big label now, you know, a label that really can get me a lot of gigs. Yeah. And yeah, of course I was a big fan of Hot Creations back then. Mm-hmm. And, that was like the biggest label. And I was like, okay, I need to get my tunes on there. And I basically made everything that I thought Jamie would like, Jamie Jones.
Yeah.
And, but I could not get him my music because I sent him emails, but it just didn't come through. And then I thought, okay, when he's playing in Holland, I just need to go and see him and make sure he sees my face, talk to him, and give him my music. And that's what I did. Every time when he played in Holland, I was there. And I was just like, hey, I'm here again. Yeah, you know, if the USB, and the USB thing never worked. Never. I never gave someone a USB and got an email back like, hey, great tracks.
Oh, man.
Never. Yeah. And yeah, it was crazy. And so at some point, I got his email, but he didn't check it. And I think like the sixth time that I saw him, I went to his tour manager. Yeah, he just got a new tour manager. And I said to him like, hey, man, really trying him to listen to my music, but it just doesn't work. And he was like, hey, you know what? Here's my cell phone number. And I think it was a bad choice to give myself. But anyways, so I sent him my music. And he was like, oh, okay, I'm going to show him. And that same night, yeah, I got a video of the tour manager that Jamie was playing my tune at Elro. Wow. And I was like, oh, okay, it's happening. Yeah. And because I knew, like, if he just hears the track, I'm 100% sure he's going to sign this. And I did say this like 200 times in my career, but that time I was right. and a week later, I got an email from Jamie like, hey, I want to release this on my label.
Awesome.
Do you have something else that we can make it into an EP?
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh, okay, wow, okay. Private jet, here I come, you know. Like, I was like, okay, yes, it's happening. And I sent him like six tunes and...
Mm-hmm.
And then it's on, okay, we got an EP, let's go. And this was like, I think the fourth year in really having a little bit of a career. And I remember that I had my first gig outside of Europe, and it was in Tokyo, in Japan. I never got back there. It's such an amazing city.
Yeah.
different countries. I really want to go back. So I was on my way to Japan, and I sent him an email with like, hey, I made a new track. Here it is. And that one was called Parallax. And the other track that he signed was Dimension. And I sent him the new track. I was like, hey, maybe it's something else. And he was like, oh, but how? And he just emailed like, okay, but this is, I want this one, you know? So maybe we can skip the B-side of that tune and put it together.
Yeah.
And it was like, I think 40 days before the release. And I was like, yo, sure, whatever you want, you know? And then I got videos that he was playing in a Time Warp. And that's kind of also where a little bit of hype came, because he had this Mixmag stream at Time Warp, and he played the track. And I saw a lot of people in the comments like, hey, what is that track? What is it, like 48 minutes? Hey, what is it? And I was like, oh, wow, yeah, it's my track. And it got a lot of likes. I was like, oh, wow. Then I started to get messages like, hey, is that Parallax tune? Is it yours? Yeah, it's mine. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's coming. And that was amazing. And the cool thing that what I saw is that he played the track in the stream of Time Warp. And I was listening, and I was like, hey, this is sounding weird. What is he doing? Mm. And then he was playing it again. So he played it, and then he played it again. Mm. So I heard like the, how do you call it, like the phase?
Oh yeah, the phase. Yeah,
phase issues. Yeah, And he played it again. I was like, huh? And when I saw that, I saw the crowd even more wild. Mm. Like, oh, it's coming again, you know? And I was like, oh, that's so smart. Okay. And then I just made some small edits into the original and said like, hey, I like that what you did at Time Warp. Let's just put it in the track. And all good. And the release came. And it came out, and I said to my agency, I had a new agency, I said, okay, whenever that track coming out, like, be ready. It's finally gonna happen. Because I was telling my agency, like, why aren't we getting gigs outside of Holland like more? And they were like, yeah, but you need good release, you know, you need a good release. And I had this release, you know, I was releasing Hot Creations, the biggest label, and had a really cool track, and it came out, and that was kind of it. Like, it just came out. I got some UK shows, which was nice. Also started my UK career, but I was thinking like, okay, when I release this, I thought I was going to be like a superstar, you know? Fuel the jet. I'm coming. No, but yeah, like sometimes you can have that. That's the thing. Like, there isn't a formula. It's not like, oh, we're going to get you gigs. You're gonna get your international gigs if you have a release on a good UK label. It's just other things as well. I was thinking I was gonna be a big DJ then, but it just didn't kind of happen. But it started to grow. So it started to grow more organically, and I have to say, looking back, I'm kind of happy how it went, because having an organic career and not having this big hype that can really help as well.
Yeah, we've spoken to so many artists and DJs on this podcast, and you know, people that have had that massive moment, and the hype, you know, from their point of view, has sometimes hurt them in their career to have that, to land so large at the very beginning.
Yeah,
the expectation beyond that is difficult to live up to sometimes.
It really can be. So it's, I think when that happened, I'm being a little dramatic. Like, it was not that I was like, fuck, oh, no way. Yeah, I got some, it went into the Beatport top 100. So I was happy. I got more shows. The fees went a little bit up, but I was like, okay. I think what I'm trying to say, I was just so living up to this moment, like spending years and years sending him my tracks, making music for him. When it came out, I was like, okay, so what's next, you know? Now what? Because, yeah, I'm still doing everything I did, and it's going better and better, but I was like, okay, so what's next? And I was like, okay, let's try and do it again. I don't know why I thought that. But anyways, so every month I send him tracks again, sending tracks. Then it never worked again. So I just bumped into him. I said, like, come on, just tell me, what do you want? You know, like, what do you want from me? Like, I've tried everything. Like, he was like, you know, don't try so hard. Just go into a studio and make some music and have fun, you know. Yeah. Just don't, like, if you're making tracks for my label, what's coming out now, you probably already are like 6 or 7 months too late. Mm. Because that track is already passed.
Yeah.
I've been playing it for half a year. So try and make something and try to make something new. And that was really a game changer for me. Yeah. Because at that point, I just went to the studio and just like make music that I thought was nice. Yeah. And that was also the start of what has become my album now, because on the album as well, which you kind of talk later about, is that, yeah, it's just, it's music, it's like everything. Like, it isn't just a tech house beat, it's also house, or it no beat at all. It's just, it's a feeling. And that has been so nice since that point. Like, just like me, like making music and having fun. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I started to, because I was making the tracks, and I couldn't find a proper home for them, because, yeah, it isn't Hot Creations, it wasn't Solid Roofs, it wasn't anything, you know. So, but I did have fans asking, like, when is it coming out, you know? And I was like, yeah, I don't know, because I don't know where to send it to.
Yeah.
That's why maybe I have fans enough, and maybe it's the time to give back to my fans instead of looking for new ones. And that's why I started my label Dark Side of the Sun, just to give myself more freedom to release whatever I want, and especially whenever I want. Because now, if it doesn't work out finding a good label for a track of mine, I'm like, okay, then I'm gonna release it myself, you know. And that's what I also say to, let's take a break. So I made the label, I was releasing stuff, and it was basically a platform for me. Then I got demos. And I was like, demos? Whoa, people send the music to me?
Yeah.
Like, okay. That was kind of weird. I think the moment that I really thought that, okay, people do really think I'm cool or whatever. No, like, it's funny. And I start getting demos, and I start releasing EPs of other people. And what I'm still saying now to DJs and young producers, like they send me tracks, and I listen to the tracks, and I was like, ah, yeah, it's cool, but I've heard it before, you know. So I always say to the DJs, like, I'm 100% sure you have tracks on your computer which you don't know where to send. Mm. I'm 100% sure, because every producer just makes music sometimes and get into this weird little inspiration flow and just makes something really different, you know. And that's what I send those tracks. That's the tracks that I want to hear. And that's the same thing with Jamie, I think, they just think like music is always changing, and it could be nice, like, having the next big thing on your label. And it's especially like the last 2 years have been very like interesting, what's happening in the music world, because the tech house from 3 or 4 years ago is kind of gone. And especially like EDM music is just, it's not there anymore. And now, especially what I saw with during Amsterdam Dance Event, we have the Ziggo Dome in Amsterdam. That's the biggest concert hall we have. We had like five Awakenings techno parties in that music room. So that is like techno. And then I mean like the more Rainier Sonnenfeld, Charlotte de Witte, the more main stage techno, that is the new EDM. Just look at the Tomorrowland stage, main stage last year, you know. So it's so sick to see how, in a good way, like how things are changing now. And everything just got a bit like quieter and slower. Like the main stage music now is more like minimalistic, and the main stages of a tech house festival is becoming more minimal and more house, you know. It's really it's good. I'm very happy with this, because I just really like house music and also more complex house music. And I was like touring in America and thinking like, okay, people like tech house is fairly new here, because like the last, like, I think, yeah, like EDM music was very big there. And I had my first tour, and I just really noticed like, wow, I could just easily play whatever I want here, because people do like it, you know. And I think that's also because of definitely social media that has a big influence in that, into giving like music that music changes so fast. Mm-hmm. 6 or 7 years ago, you had an EDM DJ getting big here. Then a year, 6 months later, they had a tour in USA. And 2 years later, they had a tour in Asia. Mm-hmm. And now with TikTok and Instagram and all the resources we have, people can all listen to it at the same time and just go with the flow as well. And when I was in America for the last time, I spoke to a lot of DJs there and upcoming DJs and more local talents. They're all watching to Europe. They're all checking out DJs on Instagram from Europe and see what's happening in Amsterdam, in Berlin, in London. You know, things change so fast. Yeah. And I think it's good us as well.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's always been a community, hasn't it? It's always been people on the dance floor listening to a DJ. It's just exponentially grown out now. Anyone can listen to anything anywhere in the world at any time from any, you know, any DJ set or whatever. And, you know, people, you know, bemoan the prevalence of phones and things on dance floors and sometimes things like that. However, you know, those videos and that music that can be shared amongst people and those moments, you know, surely brings on another generation of people that are interested in it as well.
Yeah, like social media isn't that bad at all. Mm. Like it has its negative points, of course, but this is also the good thing. And that's nice about that music is such a, yeah, what you say, like a community thing. It brings people together. Especially, I really noticed that while COVID, that like I want to listen to music together, you know. And you had this in Holland. You had a lot of like this more like listening events where people just listening to music together. Mm-hmm. And if you are on a dance on the right dance floor with the right music, it's you just like the crowd and the club just emerges into this big group of friends. Mm-hmm. And you have, because that's the thing, you have something in common. Everybody is there, like if I say on a good dance floor, mm-hmm. is there, they all have something in common. They like that DJ, they like the tunes that he plays. So that's the thing what we have in common at that point. Mm-hmm. And that's also the fun thing about social media, is that you can just make friends so easily and stay in touch with people all over the world and talk to each other and have a big connection with someone. You know, like there's so many DJs or friends that I know via social media and still haven't met yet, you know. So weird, but it's very interesting.
And I mean, if we just rewind a little bit, like you mentioned Dark Side of the Sun, your label. I mean, in terms of like, you know, you've taken us through, you just wanted it as an outlet for yourself to be able to have that place where you can just be yourself and release what you wanted to release. And you're getting demos coming into you. Who's the filter in terms of what you put out and judging those demos? Is it just down to you yourself, or do you have a team around you? Do you like to share things with people and be like, what do you think of this? Or do you just believe in yourself?
No, especially the label is very personal. Mm-hmm. I'm not very good at listening to demos, but that's just because I'm very complex when it comes to being an A&R and also being a DJ. Like the label is maybe even too personal for me. It's mm-hmm. just that everything that I want on the label has to be exactly what I like. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's not even the idea behind the labels, especially like other tracks with other artists, was that, okay, if I play it, it's good enough. I want it on the label. But now I get a lot of stuff, so it's not that easy anymore. Mm. But it is very personal. And that's also the catch as well of having a label. I wanted the label to be a place for people to release that kind of unique music. And I'm actively not looking for, how do you say, top 100 tracks. Mm-hmm. I wanted the label to be just a place where you can release just good music. That's it. Just good music. Because it's like I found it very hard when I was making music that everything had to have something that sold the track. Mm-hmm. Every label said, yeah, there's missing something. I don't know, like a vocal or this. Otherwise, it's not going to sell, you know. Mm-hmm. And I hate that. That's what I'm always like from a DJ perspective. I'm not really looking anymore to new releases. I'm most of the time I'm just looking back into old catalogs or old vinyls or old Bandcamp releases. That's so nice. Like Bandcamp released such like cool, unique shit from back in the days. And when I'm all checking out the labels that I like from back in the days, that they just released fair, good music. That's it. If I listen back to tracks that I play from back in the days, they don't have this sick arrangement or this something special, just a good flow and a good beat and a good groove. And sometimes that's just it. That's just good enough. But that's the catch also with the label, because it does help a label to grow if you have tracks that sell, you know, like if you have some Beatport top 10 tracks on there and because then people know the label and then they start getting into the label. And as well, that the label is so diverse that people don't actually know what its identity is. Because that's the thing about Dark Side of the Sun. I wanted just as me that it was diverse and it was like a lot of different sides, you know, of everything. And yeah, it can happen that fans of the label like don't like this release but do like that release. That's kind of hard, and that's the same with me. Like not every one of my fans would like every release that I do, but that's just me. I just like to keep it exciting. I just like to have more, to have everything, you know, not to be, there's so many artists that do the same thing over and over, and I'm like, I'm just not a really big fan of that. And yeah, that's also one of the reasons that at some point I wanted to do an album, because I was making so many different tracks, so many just music, that I thought, okay, maybe this is kind of weird for my audience that I would just release a track like this any other day. And I was like, okay, what if I make an album? Because that's the thing about an album. Every album has their weird bits on it, like the weird tracks. And that's what I really liked about making an album, is that just letting your inspiration flow and just trying, because then, you know, like, ah, it's an album, it's cool, you know, it's fine. If it doesn't get picked up, maybe a lot of other tracks on the album will do, so that's nice. And that was so cool about making that album, is that I really wanted to show my world my more artist side, that I'm not just a tech house DJ, just more also like just a musician. And if I'm listening, I want it to be a more like poppy album, like how a big artist would make an album, but then just with, let's say, underground music, you know?
Yeah.
So I was just making interludes and everything, because that's what the cool albums have. And I was just making like short bits of music. And now when I was making the interlude, I was like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to try, because it's just going to be like a 1 minute track. And then at some point it just drags you into that project and you make the weirdest stuff. And I think like four of the interludes on the album just became full tracks, like tracks of 4 or 5 minutes that still now I really enjoy. I can just put on the album and I hear that track, that weird track. And I'm like, wow, I'm really happy with this, you know? And when I listen back to releases I did 2 years ago, I was just making beats. When I hear the beat, I'm like, yeah, okay, fun, but yeah, okay. You know, like, it's a beat, yeah, cool, nice, it works on the dance floor. But if you make something that it's just, I don't know, from this weird energy that you had back then, it stays with the soul or something. It's funny how it goes, and I'm so happy with what the album has become.
Yeah, I mean, the album First Contact, it's you know, it's interesting that you say, because about an album and a dance music or electronica album is sometimes so difficult to create, to like get it to all hang together as an album. Sometimes it could just be a collection of singles and just like bangers, and that's all it's going to be. But to really put some thought into it, to have a flow to it, I think it's always, I love listening to an electronic music album that does that. It isn't just going to like beat you over the head. It's like a whole listen. You can sit down and, you know, good bits for the club, but also good bits for at home as well.
Yeah, and that's the fun thing about an album, about some albums, is that when you have an album, like, let's I'm a really big fan of of Kendrick Lamar. Mm-hmm. And you don't really hear it in my music, but that's fine. It's his music. Anyways, and I couldn't make stuff like that. I'm not that good. So when I listen to albums like that, you put it on, okay, and you're ready. Like, you're going to listen, okay, one track to another, and you're like, okay, well, this is not kind of my thing, but okay, I'm just going to listen more. And you get into the album, and then you're done. You have the album finished, and you're like, okay, four or five tracks max really got my attention and I really like. And then you're going to listen to that tracks. And then later you're kind of done with those tracks and you start listening to the full album again. They're like, oh, wait a minute. Wait, the tracks that I didn't like at first were actually kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. And then you start to like those again and more and more and more. And that's what the cool thing about an album is. And that's what I kind of hope as well. I'm not having big expectations from the album, you know. I'm not thinking like, okay, when it came out, it's more like I want to make something that I'm super proud of, mm-hmm. and I can still stand behind like 5 years later, like, okay, this is what I've done. And if people, like, for example, check me out in, let's say, 5 years, go to my Spotify and see this album and hear this old tracks that I made before, it can be timeless, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's, then they hear those old tracks, like, oh, that's nice. Okay, this is cool, you know. So that's a nice thing about an album. That's such more, how you say, like, lifespan, mm-hmm. than just an EP, you know. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what the life of an album. So that's kind of why I made an album like this.
Excellent. I mean, so, you know, you've done the album. You know, what's 2023 hold for you? Kind of what's next? What's on the plan? What haven't you done that you want to do and achieve in the next 12 months?
Well, I would hope to say that I won the lottery the next 2 months. Like, listen back to the interview. Oh, that was when I didn't have tons of millions of the bank. What I really want with the album to show more my artistic side. Mm-hmm. And actually, like, today I'm going back to the studio and finish my live sets. Mm-hmm. Because I really want to, for this year, if 2023, mm-hmm. I really want to do some live sets as well. Mm-hmm. And really show, I think now, last year was so nice with everything going. This is gonna, I really have the feeling that 2022 is gonna really be my year, that I'm on my best. Like, I release my album, I have this live set which is going to be very cool. It's going to be more also with of a show, you know, like, so it's not just a club live set. I also want it to be in concert halls or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not big, but just I want to really show, like, to the world that I'm an artist. Mm-hmm. And I think that point, I also, how do you say, I also launched my new concept. Mm-hmm. Which I'm going to do parties with 2023. It's really going to be a year where everything is going to make sense. Mm-hmm. That's it. I have my album, I have my life set, I have my new concept. The labels, I for the Dark Side of the Sun label, I'm now working on some release that are killer. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be nice, you know. It's been an interesting year, like, from doing the Circo Loco parties, which was basically my biggest dream ever. Mm-hmm. This year, I found my sound. Mm-hmm. I found last year, I was so looking to, what do I want? What do I want to show to the world? What kind of, you know, in music, you have all these clusters. Mm-hmm. Like, you have all these, you have the underground, you have the main stage, you have, mm-hmm. the hype music, you have this and that. Mm-hmm. And I always felt that I was kind of in between. Mm-hmm. But now I just know that I'm in between. Like, I just like everything. And now, especially with my DJ sets, I felt like I finally have the sound that I want to show, mm-hmm. to the audience. And it works, like, it kind of works. So yeah, it has been an interesting year, and I found happiness, like, solid, like, happiness in where I am now. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't want to be the next Jamie Jones, you know. I don't have to be a superstar. It's just what I'm doing now, I'm just so happy with that. Mm-hmm. And I realize more and more and more that to me, it's all about just playing good music in the right rooms. Yeah. And the last year has been so good. I've been finding myself in the DJ booth at the right time, at the right place. You know, it's just in September I played Circo Loco in the second room from 3 till 5 after High and before Enzo Siragusa. And I was there with all my friends and I think like 20 friends, and the energy in that room was crazy. Like I was playing the best set I ever did, and I was playing everything. I went from 125 house music to 137 progressive and trance and kind of ghetto house. Uh-huh. It was everything, you know. Like and you have a couple of artists that sometimes you see how they're developing, and at some point as an outsider you see, okay, you are at your best now. Mm-hmm. You're at your prime. You are really happy with what you're doing. You know, that's kind of around the same time when Patrick Topping started his trick label, his trick parties. That's like, okay, so this is what you like.
Yeah.
This is what you love to do. And that's why I make sure and build that I'm in the most comfortable place ever, with having my own parties where I decide what you're going to listen to and what's the vibe. Mm-hmm. And with my label that I'm going to decide what's on there. Just, it's more about not looking so much at other people and what the industry wants or needs. Just like, it's more just what do you want and where do you find your happiness? It's all about you, and sometimes it's very hard to find that spot. Mm-hmm. And of course, this music industry can be super hectic and demands a lot of your mental health. Mm-hmm. But it's all about you. It's what is your happiness? Mm-hmm. What do you think is important to you? A lot of DJs that I know, just that I spoke to, is just like, oh, I'm just super happy with what I'm doing. DJing is more of my hobby. I have my regular job in the week, and in the weekends I just like to play music now. Mm-hmm. And if that's your happiness, that's fine. Mm-hmm. You know, if your management says to you like, hey, we want you to be on tour 365 days a year and you don't want that, just tell them. Just go into if they're decent, they understand. Mm-hmm. It's now I'm at this point where I think like, yes, I know what I want to be and what I am. And it gives a lot of headspace.
Yeah.
And it gives more time to focus on the good things. Mm-hmm. And on the things that you want. I also always struggled a lot with mental health. And now when I'm looking around me, what other people doing, and I'm like, shit, I want that spot as well. I think like, no, it's okay. Just think about that life set.
Yeah.
Think about the lifestyle. Just go and think of that and make that work. Mm-hmm. And that's the same thing with the album. If it flopped, I don't know, maybe it already flopped. maybe it didn't. Mm-hmm. But it's more like, I'm so happy with what I made. And if you made something that you're 100% convinced with, mm-hmm. or that you think like, okay, this is what I am. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. Mm-hmm. Because then you just tried and you were yourself. But if you tried something that you wouldn't believe in the first place and it doesn't work out yet, that's stressful. Then you're like, fuck, what do people want? Now I don't know anymore. And at least if you're doing something that you're okay with, then it's just fine. That's just life, you know. Mm-hmm. Then you can be happy with it as well.
What, you know, wise words. And what we've been talking about is where you have had that journey to be true to yourself and to find all that passion from within is so much more rewarding. You know, we have been talking for over an hour now, which is great. It's perfect. You know, we always have the final question at the end, which is, you know, we are house culture, and we are so interested in not only the music of the scene, the community, but the whole culture around everything. And your kind of contribution to that, you know, has been great so far, and we can't wait to see, you know, your and follow your future career. I mean, at this point in your life, what has the culture of the scene brought you, apart from kind of happiness and, you know, a creative outlet? What else has it brought you personally?
So, yeah, that's a fairly good question. I think the coolest part about this culture is that it brought you a lot of friendship. Mm-hmm. And I've made so many new and really close friends with really good hearts that you can support each other. You can do something for each other as well. And that's what I think it's so nice about music, is that it really connects. And a lot of people are always struggling with everyday stuff, you know, not only in music, like life is, it's tough, you know? So that's the thing, to be in a branch that preserves joy and happiness to people is also a very confident thing, you know? It's just so nice to be in a position where you can make people smile, you know, like, and have a good time. And it's not as that, it's not like I'm a doctor or anything, but it's just nice to be in a room anywhere in the world and you can have fun with each other. Mm-hmm. And that was the sad thing about COVID, is that life was so dark back then because music is everything to us, you know? So being back in places to meet new people and connecting with each other over music and making new friends, that is, I'm so happy. What now, like when that was away, I was like, wow, now I know what a joy this is. Mm-hmm. And how lucky I am and we are to be in this position. And yeah, just do music, you know, it's so nice. It's really, really special.
Cool. That's perfect place to wrap it up. Thank you so much, Luke. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Yeah, thank you, man. It was nice.
House culture.
That was a good one, wasn't it? I think you were lucky to even hear that interview, as I accidentally switched off my recorder near the end and almost lost all of that audio. It was my absolute worst nightmare, and the first time that's happened. So let's thank the Google gods that I was able to recover it all for your listening pleasure. So let's ignore my technical failings and marvel in the amazing journey that Lucas had, all the way from his swing in his parents' lounge to the stages of huge festivals around the world. I loved hearing about his musical education, both at home and at school, as well as getting an insight into the creative process behind his new album First Contact, which is available across all platforms now. And for those regular listeners, you may have realised that we didn't cover off Luke's choices for our perfect playlist on Spotify. However, he has been good enough to send me his tracks after the fact. So, for his Catalyst track, Luke has chosen the absolute banger that is Joris Vaughan's Goodbye Fly from 2012. For his floor filler, he has opted for his very own Hot Stuff from his aforementioned new album First Contact. The tribally tinged beauty of Eden Burns' Invercargill is his choice for a sunsetter. The Tearjerker, a track that just fills Luke with emotion, is a track that has come up before, being Anya Schneider's choice for a last tune. It's the full strings mix of Octave One's Blackwater. And finally, his pick for a last tune is the slice of techno funk that is I'm Lonely by Hollis P. Munro. So, if you want to listen to those choices alongside all of the selections from our previous podcast guests, fire up your Spotify player, search for the House Culture Perfect playlist, stick it on shuffle, and turn it up loud. Also, if you're on Spotify, you can now leave us a comment on this episode in the Q&A section just under the episode description on your mobile. So don't be shy, get in touch. If Spotify isn't your thing, you can also leave us a review on Apple or get in touch with us on our Instagram page at HouseCultureNet. We always love to hear from you and we'll give you a shout out on a future episode if you have something nice to say. This time around, I'd like to say a big shout out to the person on Instagram who goes by the name of Ishimi, who told us that, as a proud member of the S-Man Army, she loved hearing more about Roger Sanchez's journey in our recent episode with him. Thank you so much. And make sure you stay tuned, because if you loved Roger, you won't believe who else we already have in the bag. So, this is the end of the show. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at HouseCultureNet to keep up with all the goings on in the world of house music. And if you want to get in touch with me directly, you can do that also on Instagram at DJ Matt Rouse. Thanks for listening. Rave safe and see you next time.
House. House Culture.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.